And welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hey, we're going to have a fun show today. We're going to focus on the foster and adoption process today. And we're going to spend most of the show working on this. So, you know, since COVID happened, and I don't think there's anybody in the entire universe who doesn't know what it is, but since this happened, one of the cool byproducts of it is that a lot of people seem to have decided that adopting animals is a great idea because they're home, and people are getting lonely. They're getting, you know, bored, and you know, animals are great, and they bring us so much joy. They do so many wonderful things, not just my cancer and disease detection dogs who, you know, and our service dogs we train at Merlin's Kids, you know, that these dogs are able to literally save lives. But to me, you know, every dog out there, every cat out there, every chipmunk that somebody's got in the tank in their house, somebody's hamster, even goldfish, they are kind of an emotional support animal. Well, why do we have animals? Well, first of all, they don't tell us we look fat in that new pair of jeans. They don't criticize us and say, hey, you're getting some wrinkles, or hey, you looks like you put on a COVID-20 there. They just love us. They're not judgmental. They don't talk. And so many times I've heard people say to me, Janice, if only my dog could talk, or if only my cat could talk, I wonder what he would say. And I said, you'd call him an ex-husband or an ex-wife. We don't want them to talk. We wish they could, but the beauty of animals is that they love us despite ourselves. So if an animal looks at you with those loving eyes like I see with Wyatt, and, you know, he's getting older, but he looks at me still the same way he always has. He looks at me like I'm the most special, amazing person in the world, and he stares at me, and he just wants to be near me. Now, take a man, a woman, a non-binary human being, anybody you know, and see if you can get them to just love you and look at you lovingly and want the best for you and just want to be in your presence, and they don't want anything back. Yeah, that's not happening. So that's why we love dogs. Dogs and cats and all the animals that we have as pets are all emotional support animals. The reason they're emotional support animals is pretty simple, because we need them emotionally. We need to have, you know, the beauty of it, like I said, is that the animals don't talk to us. They don't talk in a language we understand. But I can teach you how to speak Doganese, which I call Doganese, is the language of dogs. So if you have a dog, whether you're fostering it, whether you're adopting it, whether you've already gone through the process, whether you're looking to buy a puppy and have all that cool stuff that goes with it, yeah, it's also a responsibility. And remember, no animal, well, I shouldn't say no, but rarely does an animal show up at your doorstep. I have had dogs and cats show up at my doorstep, but I'm sure a lot of you have. But for the most part, we say, oh, we need a non-shedding dog. Let's go buy a doodle of some sort or whatever. And then you don't realize, like, oh, gee, look, it has health issues. Not all of them, but enough of them. Oh, it has health issues, or oh, it has behavioral issues, or oh, it bit the kid. I just heard a story about a woman who, and I spoke with her, that they bought a service dog, like from some place in Colorado. Place went out of business, but before it went out of business, they sent a doodle of some sort, 8 months old, was supposedly a trained service dog. And it was adorable. And the dog proceeded to bite the kid and rip out his feeding tube out of his stomach. So if you've ever seen somebody with a feeding tube, I mean, that's bad, because all that gunk that's in there can cause like peritonitis and like sepsis. So what happened to the dog? I don't know. They took it back and gave it to somebody else. I don't know. But the point being, some dogs are better at things than others. And I think what winds up happening is people look and fall in love with something with their eyes instead of falling in love with your heart. Like your heart, I always say to people, trust your heart. Your heart, if you go with what your heart tells you, if you say, wow, you know, I want to buy one of these little cute little fluffy things in the pet store for $4,000 because I have nothing better to do with $4,000 than waste it on something that's a mutt. But if you want that, instead of doing that, go to a rescue. There's some amazing rescues. We're actually going to be interviewing a good friend of mine who started a rescue, and it's pretty fascinating the things that people expect and don't expect and don't understand about animals. So if you get yourself a border collie, you're wicked smart. But if you don't own a farm or a big property, or you're not going to be taking this dog out for walks and exercising not only its body but its mind, you are going to hate that dog because it's, unless you get really lucky and it's just a really chill dog, which they're usually not, or an Aussie or whatever, you know, these doodle things, they're going to have energy. And you have to think about, is that something that's going to fit into your lifestyle, or is it something that's going to change your lifestyle? And I'm not talking about the puppy thing. This puppy thing, we know, you know, you got to housebreak them and all. But I think the biggest and most important factor is lifestyle. What are you going to do? Are you going to be traveling a lot? Are you going to be working 12 hours a day? Does your job, maybe your job that you're, let's say, a physician, and right now, because of COVID, you're doing these great things at home and you're able to do all your consults, you know, from home. But what happens when everything eventually, hopefully, goes back to somewhat of a normal? And now the dog you just got, and it could be in a month, it could be in 6 months, it could be a year, 2 years, whatever. What's going to happen when you have to go back to work and now you're on swing shifts and overnights and everything else, and now suddenly the dog is going to be alone? Well, maybe, although you might not love them as much, maybe you could look at a cat. And, you know, I talk about cats rarely. There are some pretty cool cats. I personally want either an Abyssinian or a Bengal. A couple of my friends in Aruba and two friends up here who live near where I am, up here in this private area in New Jersey, they have Abyssinians. These things are like dogs. Like, I love them. I wish I weren't so allergic. But if you need a dog, like if you want to have a dog, that's great. But think about your lifestyle. Make sure that you're being fair. Because honestly, even if you want a dog, but you're suited better to a cat or a rabbit. I mean, bunnies are like the cutest thing ever. I used to breed rabbits when I was a kid in 4-H, and I had my number one rabbit in the country, won 5 best in show. You know, it was pretty cool being 14, 15 and having the top animal of its breed in the entire country. That's a cool thing. And if you have kids, you should get involved in like a 4-H club or something like that. But going back to buying something, it's kind of like adopting children. When, you know, not that I'm telling anybody not to have your own natural born children, but if it doesn't matter, or let's say you're already 50 years old and you're like, I'd like to have kids, but so adopt a 10-year-old. So there are so many amazing animals or so many amazing children in different countries, in different breeds and different species of dogs and cats and different animals. The goal is that you should not only enrich your life, but you should be enriching the life of whatever, whomever you're adopting. So think about it that way. Is that animal going to have a better life with you than the animal would have with, you know, somebody else? Is that child going to have a better life with you than he or she would have had with the country or the area where that child comes from? And that's really what we have to look at. I think a lot of people did nice things for selfish reasons. And what I'm afraid of is as people start going back to work, these dogs and cats, but especially the dogs, are going to be abandoned. They're going to be dumped back in the shelters. And now, yeah, it's great that for those months the dog was able to have a great life, but it's leaving that dog now who was used to the shelter and now brought it into a home, and now the dog's going to go back to a shelter. And that's really not fair. So if you made that commitment, thank you so much. I'm grateful to each and every person who rescues, because you are the backbone, as I am, of the entire caretaking of animals. We rescue because there's something out there that already needs our help. We don't have to make more. And this is coming from someone who breeds Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks. I'm telling you, okay, when somebody calls and says, I really want a puppy, but I'll talk to them and say, hey, I know of a rescue that's a Ridgeback mix, a lab mix, or a, you know, greyhound or whatever that needs a home. This would be a great dog for you. The great benefits of having something that's a little older, somewhere between, let's say, 1 and 6, you're still going to have a plenty of life left in the animal, in the dog, right? Especially smaller and mixed breed, F1 generation mixed breeds, not the ones that are, you know, you're breeding to the mini of this and the toy of that, but true mixed breed dogs, like let's say a shepherd and a, you know, like a collie or something. But just those two, those dogs tend to have what they call hybrid vigor. Hybrid vigor means your dog's going to be healthier and live longer. Hey, that's great. Where it doesn't come in is when you have poorly bred parents and you're breeding the poorly bred parents to each other and then breeding it with another close relation, poorly bred parent for the F2 generation. So think about adopting, but also another way you can get involved, which I think is great. And a lot of rescues, and one of the rescues that we're going to be interviewing in the next couple of weeks, they do this. What I love about it is you can foster. There are a lot of foster-based rescue groups, and they have all-breed rescues, which an all-breed rescue means they get any dog. So they'll have pit bulls. They'll have, you know, little fluffy Maltese mixes. They'll have poodle mixes, and you can save $4,000 and rescue something that's already here and not patronize puppy mills and backyard breeders. But what you don't understand is you can have that dog temporarily and have the benefit and let the dog benefit also, because then somebody is going to be training it. You're going to be spending time, and then they can find a home with somebody who wants that dog for the rest of its life. And the dog doesn't have to go back to the shelter because the rescue actually pays its food. The rescues will normally pay for all the vet bills. They'll pay for the equipment you need for the dog, the treats, whatever. And that's a great way of being able to get you a dog short term where you don't have to like renege on your commitment to take care of that dog forever. So thinking about it like that for a minute, okay, you say, hey, Janice, I think that sounds like a great idea. I would love to have a rescue dog. I would love to foster. How do I get started? Well, interestingly enough, a lot of rescue groups are not good. And now it's not the animals, because everybody pretty much goes down south and rescues animals, or you go to Texas. We all go, there's certain places that there's a lot of dogs. Everybody goes the same place. But it's not that, it's the follow-ups afterward. A good rescue, you should vet them out. Don't just say, oh, I want that dog. You should pick a rescue that has a good reputation, that does good work, and that guarantees those dogs. There's one rescue that I'm going to be interviewing hopefully next week or the following week. And they have a contract, which is wonderful, that states what kind of training you're allowed to have and says, you know what, we'll provide free training for you guys. Well, geez, that's great. So you'll get that support, and that's for an adopter. So you can imagine for a foster. I do that too. I've actually got a number of shelters around the country that I will do either through like a webinar, webcam, or do it live when I'm in the area. And I do these events for people to teach them what they need to do and how to handle these dogs so that if they do have a problem, they're not quick running to return it. So a good rescue is going to be following through. They're going to want to make sure that that dog isn't returned. They're going to give you a true and complete history of the dog, even if it's a bite history. They're going to tell you, hey, this dog doesn't like, you know, dark-skinned men with baseball hats turned backward and beards, you know, wearing a Yankees hat, you know, whatever. They're going to tell you what, okay, the dog's not good with cats or the dog's not good with small children. So you kind of already have that idea of what the dog is going to be good for. And if you decide, wow, I love this dog. He's just such a good dog. I can't believe it. Remember, Merlin's kids, right? We rescue dogs from shelters.
We rehabilitate them and train them intensively over a year and a half to 2 years, and then we place them as service dogs. It takes a year and a half to 2 years and $24,000 to $30,000, but it's possible. But of all the dogs, 1 in 100 can be a service dog. 1 in 100. Not 1 in 10, not 1 in 50, not 1 in 5, 1 in 100. And if you don't know, because we just worked with, we work with a lot of other small nonprofits, though. And we have one nonprofit. They rescued 3 dogs, and all 3 of them are, well, one kind of has a little talent, but he's fearful. The other one is dog aggressive. And they got them sight unseen, and the rescue pulled them. But what the problem was they weren't appropriate in the first place, because you can have a really great idea like, oh, I'm going to rescue dogs from the shelter, and I'm going to train them as service dogs because I trained my 2-pound Yorkie to sit and to pee on a pee pad. So now all of a sudden you're a damn expert. Service dogs, I mean, I've seen so few decent service dogs turned out by reputable agencies. There are probably 5 I can think of, including Merlin's kids. It's probably 5 that I've seen that I've been impressed with the dogs and said, wow, yeah, okay, you guys should be doing this. Most of them, they go out of business. They don't know what they're doing. The one dog that I evaluated, at least this one is a sweet dog. It had no skills. It lays there. It's an adorable dog, but it lays there. It's not a service dog. It's an emotional support dog. It does no skills. So a service dog has to be skills or task trained. So if you work with somebody, it's like working with an agency. You pick the agency. You say, wow, I've seen a lot of great things. I've talked to people. Everybody says you got to go to this breeder. You got to go to this rescue. You got to go to this service dog provider. You got to go to this store. You got to go to this place, this car dealer, whatever it is. When you get personal referrals, your doctor gives you that. Your veterinarian gives you the referral. A lot of people who are intelligent and whom you trust give you the same person or the same agency. That's where you go. So the first thing to do if you're going to look for a dog is don't get hung up on, oh, I want a dog that looks like Lassie. Just say, you know what? It's like having a child. And you say, I want a child who's blonde and blue-eyed and has long, pretty, you know, eyelashes. And you get a brown-haired, brown-eyed child with very short eyelashes. You're going to send them back? Well, hopefully not, right? But the idea being, we don't always get what we want. Sometimes we get what we need. And some of the best dogs I've ever seen have been dogs that I never would have chosen if I looked at them, ever. I would look at these dogs and I go, it looks horrible. It's all scraggly and scrungy. And those have been some of the best dogs in the world. And just remember, with a dog, if you keep it groomed, you feed it good quality food with no corn, wheat, soy, BHA, BHT, byproducts, propylene, glycol, all those nasty things, including red dye 40. If you feed the dog well, dog will live a longer time. Genetics definitely plays a huge part. There's also a vitamin supplement that I am religious about with my dogs, and they also gobble it up and love it. It's called Nuvet, N-U-V-E-T, Nuvet.com. And actually, you can order it online, and they're a wonderful company, and they actually do give a lot of information and ask for a lot of information on your dog, so they'll tell you what to use. They also have all kinds of natural products, so that's something I feel very strongly about. I recommend them because I recommend my veterinarian, a couple of them. I recommend that, and I recommend one of the foods I use, but I don't recommend a lot of things. So, like, let's say you get a rescue dog, you don't know, or a puppy either, but you get a rescue especially. Those dogs a lot of times haven't had the best nutrition, so they might need something extra. They not only need good food, but the vitamin supplements. So there's actually a rescue code that you can use, and you can get 15% off if anybody's interested in getting the Nuvet. It's a phenomenal product. It's 86686, I think, 86686. It's Nuvet.com, Nuvet.com. I think their phone number is 800-474-7044. I could be wrong, but I think that's it. And anyway, the goal is for you to keep your dog as healthy as possible. You want to feed it a good quality kibble. There's a lot of great foods out there. There's NutriSource is a great food. That's what I use with my dogs. I used to use Natural Planet Organics. Natural Planet Organics is not being made anymore because it was too expensive for them to make, and they kept a great price point. But there are things like Origin is a good food. It's not, to me, it's not a great food because it's just super high protein, and if you give a very high protein food to a dog who's laying around, it makes them kind of hyper because having too much protein, it's like for an athlete. So you have to really look, and people always ask me, you know, what kind of food should I feed my dog? And I said, what kind of dog? How old? What's the activity level? And they're like, oh, I don't know. It's like a three-year-old Maltese, and he just lays around. Well, why are you going to give him a 38% protein so he can be zipping around trying to burn it off? So there's no one-size-fits-all. The vitamins, yes, their products are great. But there's also, you know, other really cool things that you can do. There are digestive enzymes that you can use. There's a few that I use, the Synacore. There's Fortiflora, there's yogurt, which I use a little bit of plain organic whole milk usually, yogurt, like a teaspoon in the dog's food each meal that helps, you know, helps them to digest, and it has some bacteria in it that are good, beneficial bacteria for the gut. But again, we're going back to, if you're rescuing a dog, you don't know the background. A rescue group versus a shelter. Shelters don't typically, although we have one in New Jersey here that's phenomenal, they know history, but 99% of the time, a shelter's just going to say, we don't know, he was out on stray hold, so he waited a 7-day or 3-day, whatever it is in the state, stray hold, and then the dog is now up for adoption. He hasn't bitten anybody here yet, but we don't know anything about him other than he looks at people as they're going by. Well, you don't have history. What a rescue group will do is they will actually pull from the shelters, put typically the dog into a foster, which is a person who keeps the dog for a short time. It could be a week. It could be a month. It could be 6 months. I've seen people with quote unquote fosters they've had for 6 years. Sorry, that's an adoption. So the fosters are cool because if you foster the dog and you say, wow, you know, this is such a great dog, you can typically adopt that dog. So it's kind of like a trial period. It's great. Then if you say, oh, yeah, this dog, we like him a lot, but he's got way too much energy for us. Well, then you can keep him until they find a home, which sometimes is very quick. And then you've helped that dog, and you've also educated yourself and your family about responsibility, about taking things seriously, about making sure you make that commitment and you continue to follow through with that commitment. So a good rescue group will demand, and there will be a staunch, strict contract that will say, I have to return this dog. If I adopt it, I have to return this dog to this rescue group. And remember, people say, oh, well, how are they going to know? Because if your dog shows up because it ran away, there's a microchip in it. All rescue dogs, for the most part, have microchips. And that microchip, no matter if you change it to your name, it still goes to that rescue group too. So any rescue group is going to, any reputable one, let's say, is going to have that in their contract that you have to be able to, if you relinquish the dog, return the dog to that rescue group and let them know that you don't wish to have the dog anymore. You cannot rehome it on your own. You can, the reason they do that, you cannot give it away, is that they check you out. A good rescue group is going to ask you for your driver's license. They're going to ask for your personal information. They're going to make sure that they meet you. They're going to have a home visit. They're going to have somebody come to check your house out to make sure that your house is safe, to make sure that if you have a fence, that the fence is secure, and to make sure that your family members are all on board too. They don't want the dog to come back. The only thing worse than a dog staying in the shelter is a dog who goes back and forth. He goes to a home, he does something wrong, or the people didn't know what to do, dog comes back to the shelter. He goes to another home, something goes on there, comes back to the shelter. And most of these places have a three strikes you're out policy. So if a dog is dumped twice and goes out on a third adoption, and I remember doing a pit bull in Mahwah, New Jersey with a girl who was a blacksmith, what we call farrier, and it was a big, it's just a big pit and just a lot of work. And the girl actually reached out to me, and I helped her free of charge because she didn't, you know, really have the wherewithal to do it. But this dog was severely food aggressive, and every time he would walk by, even if the dog didn't have food in the bowl, the dog would growl and snarl and lunge at her. And this was a, like, she literally couldn't eat in her own house. She had to eat before she came home. Otherwise, the dog would go after her. I took that dog and fixed her and the dog. I had actually called the shelter. It was a shelter that I worked with a fair amount. So I knew about the dog. And the guy at the shelter told me, he said, Janice, let me just be honest with you. This has to work because this was the fourth placement. And I convinced them to please let him out for the fourth time instead of putting him to sleep. And so I couldn't let this not work. And I taught them the NCBR, natural canine behavior rehabilitation, like we train people who are interested in becoming canine behaviorists and learning our techniques and becoming certified in our techniques. And also we train people to be service dog trainers. And also for if you need to train your own dog, which we'll talk about in the second half of the show. So we can train, if we can train a person to do that, then we can train you to work with your dog and make that dog better. A good rescue group is going to support you in any education you want. They're going to support your decision. They're going to support the way you are going to communicate and handle that dog. So that's what you really want. It's important. It's important. It's important. Please don't underestimate the value of commitment and training. And again, behavior, I do behavior. Do I train dogs? Of course I train them. I mean, you're training, but training techniques, and I remember this extremely ignorant person that I had, I don't know, she communicated with me on something, and she said, well, you're a service dog trainer, but now you just said you're a behaviorist. Are you a behaviorist or are you a trainer? That's kind of like saying, are you a mother or are you a wife? Can't you do both? Right? And it's the goal is when you're using food rewards, you're a trainer. Okay? If you're using shock collars, you're a trainer. Trainers rely on outside devices and things to change in the moment a body position. A behaviorist, a real behaviorist, not a trainer who calls himself a behaviorist, but a real behaviorist, someone who studies animals and understands animals and the way they work. Those people, like myself and my team, we use behavioral techniques to train. So in other words, one of the most common things is people who, their dogs don't move out of the way. I worked with an somewhat aggressive, but very sweet St. Bernard today, huge dog. He was up to like my chest. It was crazy how big he was. So I'm looking at this dog and the dog, I could tell the dog to move out of my way, but he wasn't going to. But if I walked through him and I just gently bumped him, not kicking him, not drop kicking, not tripping over him, but just walked toward the dog, all of a sudden, the dog is, you know, going to be, you know, this lump. Well, now the dog moved out of my way. So after I had decided that I was going to work on this for a little while at this family's home, after maybe three times, the dog, when I stood up, the dog looked over at me. He wasn't afraid. We never want to use fear or intimidation. That's why you don't want to use shock collars and prong collars and choker chains and yelling and screaming and penny cans and squirt bottles and gadgets and devices that should probably be outlawed and in the medieval times probably were quite the rage or would have been. And here you are with a dog who I quote unquote trained, but using behavioral techniques. And those behavioral techniques are what is able to get through to dogs and teach them rules and boundaries and guidelines, communication. You have to communicate with animals. Stop yelling at your dogs and yelling, Fluffy, no, no, cut it out, knock it off. What are you barking at? Because you're barking louder than your dog is. And especially if you have a rescue dog or a dog that, you know, hasn't been with you a long time and you start screaming at it, that's where dogs do stupid things because people do stupider things. I know that's not a word, but it should be stupider things. and you're yelling at the dog, or you're going to grab the dog with anger, and the dog says, oh my gosh, you're going to hurt me, and he gets scared, and all of a sudden you have an incident, and boop, dog goes back to the shelter or rescue, and God forbid if they have a bite history, and now they bit somebody else, you're done. You go to some idiot who's going to say, oh, well, this is the worst dog I've ever seen, because you're a local yokel obedience trainer. And this is the worst dog I've ever seen. Well, if that's the worst dog you've ever seen, then you haven't seen very much. Because I know I've seen the worst dog I've ever seen, you know, 10,000 times. I've trained or worked with rehabilitated more than 35,000 dogs with behavioral issues and trained 1,200 service dogs myself. And, you know, many more now with our team at Merlin's Kids. So I think the real goal is if you rescue a dog, great, thank you. But you can also find a good rescue group. Tell them what you're looking for. So it's like you go for a car. You say, oh, I don't know, what do they have? Instead of that, say, listen, I'm looking for a late model Lexus. I'd love if it's black. And I'm looking to spend $20,000 to $30,000. So now the dealer, right, can go look for a car that fits what you want. So it's just because that rescue group doesn't have the dog you want now, doesn't mean that they can't find you one. And if they know you, and even if you volunteer, you foster. This way, we have something called foster failure. If you foster a dog and you say, oh my gosh, I love this dog. I don't want this dog to leave. You can foster failure and you can adopt the dog. But meanwhile, it's kind of like this great trial period. A good rescue group is going to let you do that. So we're going to actually take a little break for a couple of minutes to hear from some of our sponsors. And then we are going to be back in a few minutes with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. Stay tuned. And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Yes, it is I. It is I. And we're going to talk today about service dogs and rescue dogs and training your own dog to be a therapy dog, emotional support dog, or service dog. And I'm going to talk about the differences. I know I've done this before, but people always ask me, because today my good, adorable friend Shauna, who is one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen. She actually had a dog here, and it was an interesting one. I'm going to read you the description. It says the dog's name. It says white standard poodle, the weight, the date of birth. And then it says dog is an emotional therapy dog and a service dog that works with children in child care. And it goes through. Well, wait a minute. That is all impossible. The dog is an emotional therapy dog. What the heck is that? And a service dog that works with children. So they don't even understand. So people use this terminology stupidly. And Shauna, this one is for you, my beautiful daughter. I love you. And thank you for showing me this. So what we want to look at is really, to me, is what is your need, okay? So if you're looking for a dog that's going to be an emotional support animal, like the one lady who called me and she wants me to check her dog, evaluate the dog, see how it is. Well, the first thing is that her dog, which was a small terrier, purebred terrier, has already bitten her daughter in the face, in the lip, and ripped her lip open pretty badly. She needed a lot of stitches. It growls at everybody. It's a pretty obnoxious dog. And it doesn't mean that it's a bad dog. So just because the dog does that doesn't mean I can't fix it. I can fix pretty much anything that's not genetic as long as the family's committed to it. But if they're not committed, then the issue is, they're not going to be able to, necessarily understand. And, when somebody says, oh, I need an emotional support dog. Well, first thing is any dog, it should not have a bite history. If it does, you better figure out why it has a bite history and make sure you fix that. Get a good behaviorist. You can contact us at United Canine Professionals. It's 855-449-9288, which you can also use that number for the High Wyatt, for the 855 High Wyatt for Merlin's kids if you need a service dog or you need to train your dog to be a service dog. The goal here, though, is to have everybody understand the different types of dog. You'll hear a pet or a companion dog. So a pet or a companion dog is a dog who just makes us feel good. It's like our pet, you know. We don't really look at it and say, have this dog and go to supermarkets with it and everything. I just need a dog. Like, it's a pet. I want to teach my kids responsibility. We want to have something enjoyable. We want to make the house a more happy place. And animals are great. You don't have to start with a dog, remember. You can start with a bunny. You can start with a gerbil or a hamster. You can start with a turtle. Just be careful with salmonella. You can start with a frog. You can start with fish. You don't have to start with something that's mammalian, okay? But you do have to start with having responsibility. So a companion animal or pet means that it's a dog who stays with us and keeps us company, right? A companion keeps us company, stays with us, and it's enjoyable. So we love having them. The issue is that a lot of those dogs aren't really well-trained or well-behaved, so you end up having a problem where, you know, the dog does something and all of a sudden, you know, does something bad, and now you've got a lawsuit or bit somebody's kid in the face or pulled somebody's feeding tube out, like this other dog that supposedly was a quote-unquote service dog that bit the kid the first 45 minutes it was in their house. And this was a $30,000 quote-unquote service dog from Colorado. Dog pulled out the little boy's feeding tube. How'd you like that? Crazy, right? So we're not talking about any training. We're just talking about a dog. Now, when you get into any of the others, a therapy dog, which is a dog who does have training, or it has to have at least 8 hours of to do CGC, but they're different things. That dog should be a good, well-behaved dog who is happy and friendly and likes to be around people, and it's going to be, you know, kind of a fun animal. Those dogs for therapy dog, typically you're going to be required to have all the shot records. You have to make an appointment with the place that you're going to take the dog. There might be a release. You should absolutely, if you're taking your dog in a place in either in public or with like schools or childcare, you should 110% have a personal umbrella policy. They call it a PUP, P-U-P policy, the PUP policy, because a PUP policy is going to cover you in case your dog bites somebody. And it can be $1 million liability, $2-3 million liability. It's very important because some lawsuits, if your dog decides to bite a kid in the face, whether the kid did something or not, you're going to wind up not having your house anymore, no cars, and a huge judgment against you. So make sure you get insurance, because you can't trust that people are going to do the right thing, and certainly that kids are going to do the right thing. So a therapy dog is a good, well-behaved dog, should be pretty calm. It shouldn't be jumping around. It shouldn't be, you know, dancing around and barking and everything else. And it should be social with other animals, so that in case there's another therapy dog there that day, that your dog doesn't go and attack the other dog or vice versa. So a therapy dog has a minimal amount of training or required. Some do have a lot more training and some don't, but the requirement, at least there is a requirement that the dog passes a basic skills test so that you know that the dog isn't super aggressive and isn't super reactive. And beyond that, you know, it depends on who the CGC or TDI evaluator was, but that, at least there's training. And generally those are with volunteers who, you know, put a little time into the dog or a lot of time into the dog, and it's a good dog. And those are therapy dogs. An emotional support dog, except for the, now on the airplanes, they have to provide, they're working on making people provide some kind of training certificate, which is ridiculous because there's no certification for trainers anyway. So you could just get one like Joe's Obedience School and make something up, and instead of making the fake doctor's letter up, you make up the fake Joe's Obedience School and say the dog's trained. The proof is in the pudding. If that dog walks into an airplane and lays down at your feet and goes to sleep, you know it's well-behaved or well-trained. If the dog is terrible and attacks other animals, like my poor animals, my dogs have been attacked in airports and everything else, even in my own backyard, by neighbor dogs and things. You know, it's something that is very frustrating, but there has to be some kind of regulation. And I'm not a big government, you know, let's make government bigger. I'm the, you know, Ronald Reagan, government doesn't solve the problems. Government is the problem. So the idea being that an emotional support animal does not require any training. And the reason people are starting to lie and say that things are emotional support animals is because the Fair Housing Act. So FHA does not allow regular dogs. For, let's say the building doesn't allow a regular dog. They will allow emotional support, and they have to allow a service dog, which I'll get to in a minute. So if the dog is an emotional support dog, it does not need to have any, at all. It doesn't have to have any training. And this is where the problem is. If everybody decided that perhaps we're going to have, a little training type of a thing where the dogs can at least, kind of be a little bit more well-behaved, settled, whatever, and there were some sort of test, I think that'd be a great first step. But emotional support animals, there's no training. I don't even understand what it is, because to me, again, every dog, every animal that we have, every pet is an emotional support cat, chicken, bird, ostrich, whatever it is, dog, cat, goldfish. So emotional support just means that you feel better when you pet it. Well, isn't that what, like, all dogs and all animals, that's like we enjoy being with them and touching them, except for fish, obviously. But that's the whole point. There's no specific training, that's the idea is you have to, you have to hopefully try to, hopefully make an impact on people and tell them, like, please at least try to train your dog a little bit so it's not, attacking other people. Because also you have to think about, something else that, let's say you say, okay, well, I'm in an apartment complex. If there are other dogs there who are not well behaved too, you get into an elevator or in a hallway or staircase or something, and now all of a sudden everybody's, having problems, right? The idea being, just don't lie. Be honest about it. Be truthful, be forthright, okay? It'll work better for you. And then the final type of dogs that we have are what we call a service dog or service animal. If there's only two animals that are qualified to be service animals, it's a miniature horse, and it's certain size regulations, like I think it's 27 inches at the shoulder. It has to be below that. But if we could possibly make it where anybody who really, truly needed a dog, anyone who absolutely needed that dog to help, could get a dog that would be well-behaved and would be able to not only behave well, but would also be able to assist that person in daily, what we call ADL, activities of daily life. If you need a dog to function, if you say, I can't walk outside, I have such anxiety, but I can go out with my dog, that's already not an emotional support animal. You're probably going to a psychologist or psychiatrist already. Because that level of anxiety where you're that worried, whether it's from PTSD or just it's your body, that rises to the level of a service dog because you can't function. So a service dog is a dog who is task trained for specific tasks that can help to mitigate a disability, that can lessen the disability or help to prevent you from going all the way into whatever state you would be in without the dog. Example, you have anxiety crossing a bridge. You're driving. You start getting anxious, you're not going to make it over that bridge. You're a danger to yourself and to others. If you can have a dog or a cat or whatever animal next to you, and that animal can soothe you and maybe do tasks like lay on you like for comfort, can lick your face or do or paw at you to get you to get out of that funk that you're in, and now you can drive over the bridge. That's a service dog. So I think a lot of times people are confusing this emotional support dog thing with service dogs. I found that a lot of people who call me or apply to Merlin's Kids for service dogs or therapy dogs, they call it, and I explain the difference, or my staff explains the difference, and everybody says, oh, wow, I thought that'd be an emotional support dog. My daughter can't function. My daughter has severe PTSD from abuse. You know, that's a medical. I mean, if you're going to a doctor for that, quote unquote, condition or disability, that rises to Americans with Disabilities Act. A disability doesn't only have to be a physical disability. A disability can also be an emotional disability, something crippling, bipolar. If you have bipolar and the dog, and I have several really close friends who have bipolar, they one of them does not have dogs. The others have dogs. Those dogs, and I mean, yes, I've helped train them, but those dogs know when their bipolar is kicking in. The dogs can actually, they're task trained, okay, so I train them actually to do something specific to that person, and it can literally, like, just snap them right back. It's unbelievable. Instead of medication or in addition to as an adjunct with medication. So if you need a quote-unquote emotional support dog, maybe you really do need a fully trained service dog. And that is something that we're going to be offering. We do offer it, but we're going to be starting our classes actually next Wednesday and Thursday for our service dog training. And that includes for emotional support, because emotional support animals doesn't mean that they don't have training. It just means they don't require training. But you can have, if let's say you have an anxiety attack and you only have anxiety attacks at home, then you don't really need a dog to go out with you. But if you have anxiety or panic attacks out and they're crippling, so you don't go out, like PTSD with a veteran, those dogs are really mitigating your disability, mitigating your condition, and helping you. So they should be considered as service dogs, but they need the training. They need task training specific to you, and they need public access exposure if they're going to be going outside, not if they're going to be in your house. But if they're going to be going out into the public, you have to make sure that they're safe. They're not going to be aggressive. They're not going to be overly fearful. They're not going to be reactive. They're not going to be lunging. And they're not going to be focused on every other person. So if you have like a golden, everybody loves goldens, right? I mean, how can you not love a golden? They're like the cutest things in the world. But if your golden is supposed to be your service dog, but when it goes out, all it's doing is trying to say hi to every kid and try to lick food off the floor, that is not task-trained a service dog. That's a dog who should be a therapy dog, who should just go because he loves everybody. Like, hi, I'm a golden, pet me. A service dog should almost be aloof with strangers. A service dog should not be going after things on the floor and shouldn't be going toward other people when in vest. The dog should be focused on you, and that's a whole other thing, making sure that you're choosing wisely and choosing the right dog that can be a service dog for you or for whoever it is who needs that dog, and then you specifically task train the dog. There are a lot of people who self-train dogs. I've seen a couple of really good ones, and I've seen a lot of really horrible ones, because it's very hard to do it if you're not a professional. And again, being a local obedience trainer or shock collar trainer or whatever does not make you a service dog trainer. So please step back. Step away from the ledge. Step away from the light. Don't look into the light. It's a very specific thing. It's like training for narcotics, or what I do, training my dogs to find cancers and other diseases. Don't try it out. Don't try to figure it out. Either learn from me or learn from somebody who really knows what to do for years, like what I've been doing and like a few other people have been doing, or just get out of the way. It's like government isn't the solution, right? So government isn't going to fix the problem. Government is the problem. So you're trying to do that is the problem. So just the goal is let's be honest. Let's learn together. Let's help each other. I think a lot of you guys who think you need an emotional support dog or think you need a therapy dog because you think it's an emotional support dog might really need a service dog, and we're happy to help you. And that's something that in the coming weeks, and like I said, there will also be coming up, we will have several different opportunities for people. Like we're starting next week, so if somebody does want to train their dog to be a service dog or therapy dog working with others, or service dog working for you or someone in your family, please reach out to us at 855-449-9288 at Merlin's Kids. And if you have dog behavioral issues, we have our people at United K9 Professionals. You can look us up or call at 855-449-9288, or you can use the other number. We have a number of numbers. Anyway, it seems like as soon as I start the show, I'm ready to end the show. I have so much fun with all of you guys, talking with you, trying to help you in some way. And I love listening to you guys. We're going to have some information from different rescue groups, and we're going to be interviewing a rescue group, like I said, probably next week or the following week. We look forward to hearing from you again. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe. Be healthy. Be smart. And enjoy your animals. We love you. Have a great weekend.